Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
From an undisclosed broadcasting location.
This is a test. For the next 60 seconds, this station will conduct a test of the emergency broadcast system.
America, here comes the relief from the pain. Unapologetically, this is Lock and Load with Bill Frady.
All right, hour number three. This is Lock and Load, and joining us now from, I think he's in Dallas, joining us now from Dallas is writer Dean Weingarten. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm good. So let's talk about this bear or bears. Apparently it's not bear, a bear. It's and I didn't know this, and this is really interesting. Apparently Japan has got a lot of bears.
I didn't realize it either until I saw an article and started doing some research. And the northernmost island of Japan, called, I'm probably mispronouncing it, Hokkaido, is home to a huge population of brown bears. Now, they're considered a slightly different subspecies because they have a slight color variation. But they're essentially the same thing as our grizzly bears, brown bears, / Kodiak bears. And because they live in a similar environment to Kodiak Island, which Hokkaido is quite similar, they get enormous because they eat a lot of salmon.
Right.
And up until 1990, they were treated as pests. I mean, it's kind of like Kodiak. There's a park, you know, a national park where you couldn't hunt them. And there were a lot of bears there. But in 1990, they said, oh, we can't hunt these bears anymore. Before that, they were considered pests. And it was encouraged for people to hunt them and kill them because they did a lot of damage. And at that time, there were about 5,300 of these enormous bears on the island. And they don't tell us how that was numbered, came about. Does that include all of the year's cubs, for example, because a lot of cubs of the year die off fairly quickly. So you've got a pretty big swing in populations over the course of the year. But in 1990, they put them under protection. It's kind of similar to what we did with the Yellowstone bears in the lower 48. You know, we said they're endangered. Of course, ours were down to only a couple hundred about the time in 76. And we forbade anybody from hunting them. Well, in Japan, they didn't forbid people from hunting them, but it became kind of hard to hunt them. And they mostly relied on government trappers / hunters to kill off bears that were doing damage and threatening people. It appears to me that Japan actually took that a lot more seriously than we did in the 48 states anyway, in the lower 48, because they've been killing off several hundred bears a year in Hokkaido. And last year, well, the last year we have numbers for, 2021, they killed off over 1,000 of these enormous Kodiak brown bears. Well, they're not Kodiaks, they're Hokkaido bears, but they're basically the same bear. And they get big, you know, 1,000 pounds. It's not unusual for them. For the males, anyway. You know, there's a differentiation between the females and the males. But in the fiscal year 2021, I guess that's how they keep track of their bear problems in Japan, they had 4 people that were killed by these bears in Hokkaido. And that was a significant bump up. Usually, the average has been about one person being killed per year, which is about the same that you see in Alaska. Now, there's quite a bit of differentiation between Alaska and Japan and Kodiak Island and Hokkaido, because there's about 6 or 7 times as many people on this one island as there in all of Alaska. But then again, most of the people in Alaska are concentrated along the coastline, and that's where most of the brown slash grizzly bear population is concentrated as well. So it's not completely a bad characterization. But I have to admit, I liked the Japanese official take. They said, because, and I'm quoting from Japan News here, because the brown bear population has increased, we have entered a new period in which humans are coming into contact with them more often, said Yoshika Sato, professor at Rakuna Gakuin University in Hokkaido and expert on brown bear ecology. Whenever we go into a forest, we need to assume that bears are nearby. Well, that's kind of close to what you see in Alaska, too. A prefectural government official said, we want to have bears fear humans and reduce the amount of damage they cause. Well, that sounds like a good goal for us as well, and I think that Alaskan Fish and Game probably shares that goal. But before 1990, they had a long season, and people were encouraged to kill the bears. You know, it was, like I said, they were considered pests. But after 1990, the season was reduced. It went to from October to January. That sounds like a long time, but you got to remember that the bears are generally hibernating from December to March. So you really only have October and November to hunt the bears. And it's a real, my understanding, and I'm not an expert on Japanese firearms and hunting laws, so I have read a fair amount about it, but I know much more about Australian gun and hunting laws than I do Japanese. But it's really difficult to get a license to have a gun to hunt in Japan. You have to jump through a lot of hoops. And this bear season, and the bears have been protected for about 50 years now, it appears that the number of people who know how to hunt bears, I mean, despite what people may think, it's a skill set,
right,
and a learned thing, and the number of people who know how to hunt them and are interested in hunting them is dwindling. And in this the fiscal year of 2021, licensed private hunters killed 45 bears. But the government trappers and hunters killed over 1,000 of them.
Now, how do they kill them?
It's a good question. From what I can tell, you know, looking at the various sources I researched for this article, one of the main methods is to use a foothold snare to trap them, and then I'm presuming they shoot them after they've got them trapped.
So I'll tell you what, hold up right there if you will, because that opens up a whole bunch of questions. I've been wondering about Japan for a while. This opens up a whole can of worms with me. Dean, this article is at Ammoland.com, along with 2,200 plus more other articles he has written. I don't even know if that was grammatically correct or not. And it's all waiting for you. If you go to Ammoland.com, go down to the bottom of the page, it says All Contributors. Click on that. Dean will be about midway through on the left-hand side. Click on that. And now you have opened up a huge reservoir of an archive when it comes to stories. We'll be right back. This is Lock and Load. We'll be right back.
Solutions is the ultimate one-stop shop for all your competition, law enforcement, and military needs. Home of the weapons of WIC. Now featuring the new Pit Viper. Terran is the one who trained the one, and he is Hollywood's go-to for taking the weapons and training to the next level. His legacy of championship wins, spanning across decades, is due to his uncompromising dedication to perfection. These innovations are now offered to you at TerranTactical.com.
At Spikes Tactical, we are all shooters with a very simple mission. Make the best product we can perfect at the best possible price for our consumers. We strive to produce the best components and rifles available, with quality control second to none, because real-world events don't allow for a second chance. Whether you are an operator, competitor, or home defender, Spikes Tactical will serve you well. Go to SpikesTactical.com. Spikes Tactical, 100% American-made to the highest standard.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at GCNLive.com. That's advertise at GCNLive.com.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203. Back.
This is Lock and Load, talking to Dean Weingarten. We're talking about the bears of Japan. And the so it presents a bit of a conundrum, right? Because they have been... It's a very permissive attitude to be an animal in Japan, isn't it? A permissive environment, rather.
It depends where you're at, I think. I mean, their attitude toward animals is just different. They don't have any problem with killing as many whales as they can. It's just another animal to eat.
Right.
Up until 1990, and that's only 30 years ago, they considered these bears just to be pests. And in the research in the article, I found out that this over 1,000 bears killed, it's the highest figure on record. But the next highest record was back in 1962 when there were almost no restrictions on killing the bears. That was before they created this big national park on the island, a peninsula that's just loaded with bears. They claim that this peninsula has some of the highest concentrations of bears on the planet. So it's a really high concentration of bears, and probably the reason that they were able to kill so many back in 1962 is because that area was open for hunting. They closed it in 64, and the number of bears being killed per year dropped and continued to drop, they stopped the, or they instituted, they put in place many restrictions and protected the bears in 1990. And the population of bears at that time was down to a bit more than 5,000, we are told. It's hard to count bears. It's not easy to get a good count. So, but that's the estimate was 5,000, a bit over 5,000, and now there's very close to 12,000. And as I said, these are not easy. It's not like the bears put up a big sign and wave it around and say, "Here I am, count me." And one bear can look a lot like another bear from any kind of distance. So they use methods kind of similar to what we see in the U.S. They follow trails and look for sign, and they probably do some aerial photographing and things like that. But it's not easy to get a good, accurate count of the number of bears. But we'll just take their numbers as being correct. And so we have way more than doubled, or at least the Japanese population there is way more than doubled the number of these very large, very dangerous brown bears on the island. And the brown bear population continues to expand. That was fascinating to me. They've been killing off several hundred of these bears. I think it's been an average of 800 a year for the last 5 years, which is a lot.
Right.
Well, it's over 800, not an average, over 800 for the last 5 years. A lot of bears. And the population of the bears isn't dropping. It's continuing to increase. So it looks like you have to kill off something like 1/12, 8% or more of the brown bear population every year in order to stabilize the population. That means you're going to have to kill 1,000 bears a year from here on out, harvest them, kill them, whatever, in order to keep the population close to what it is now. If you want the population to drop, you're going to have to harvest more of them. Now, one of the interesting things here, because I monitor and read the hunting news, and brown bear hunts, especially for the really big bears like you are finding here in Japan, are very expensive. $25,000, $30,000 for a hunt like that. That would be in Alaska. It's probably a little less. They might have some hunts, but in Russia, or maybe for some of the European brown bears, but I don't think there's a huge number of them like there are in on this Japanese island. But I would think, if it were me, but I'm not Japanese, so it doesn't matter, that they could sell hunts for these bears. They want to reduce the population, and there's a lot of them, at $25,000 to $30,000 a hunt. Well, that would bring on several million dollars into Hokkaido every year. It's not like it's a renewable resource, but they have to be a little less restrictive on whether people could bring a gun or use a gun to hunt bears with in Japan. And maybe they could do something kind of like the African professional hunters, you know. The Japanese goes along with you carrying the rifle. Then when you see the bear, he says, here, shoot it. Gives the rifle. Then after you shoot the bear, you hand the rifle back to him. In Europe, I understand that most of the bear hunts are done from sturdily constructed elevated blinds where, you know, you go in and drink coffee and whatever and wait for the bear to show up at a bait and then shoot the bear. And they could certainly do something like that in Japan, too.
Right.
I don't think it's going to happen. As much as I think it makes economic sense, I think the Japanese are a little too wedded to the idea that, you know, we don't want Americans with rifles wandering around Japan. They might have had a bad experience or something with that. So, or maybe it was a good experience.
Well, they keep a very homogenous population there. It's hard to even just go live there, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's hard for anybody to emigrate.
Right.
That's another thing that I found out about this Hokkaido is it kind of was the frontier of Japan. And while we were taming the West, they were taming this island. And there were a lot of indigenous population. They call them Ainu, I believe. I'm probably mispronouncing that too, which were the natives who lived there by hunting and fishing and trapping and such. And I'm speculating, but I think that's where most of the expertise in hunting bears was. And that population has been, over the last 100 years particularly, been assimilated, and it was heavily biased. The Japanese were heavily biased against that, those people, and thought, you know, they're not really good people. They're not much of people at all. They're just barbarians. And so that population has dwindled significantly. There are apparently a few left, but not very many. So it's kind of like similar to Americans and Apaches or other tribes that live primarily by hunting. And so those people,
hang on for me, Dean,
who were native,
hang on for me,
are dwindling away.
Hang on for me, if you will. We'll be right back. This is Lock and Load.
At Chambers Custom, we have one job. We strive to build the most obsessively reliable, accurate, and beautiful pistols for the discriminating gun owner. Using the ageless 1911 design with a 21st century approach to each part and component, Chambers Custom meticulously begins each pistol as a standalone project, creating a bespoke, handcrafted, peerless firearm. They integrate all of the internal, external, and intrinsic elements that make a custom 1911 unique. Go to ChambersCustom.com. Chambers Custom, truly the mechanical advantage.
For over 25 years, Arrow Precision has paved the way as a leading manufacturer of American-made AR parts. Arrow Precision caters to the rifle builder by engineering quality receivers, handguards, and other essential parts. Arrow Precision's added enhancements create a smooth build process from start to finish for beginners and seasoned builders. Whether this is your first rifle or your 50th, Arrow Precision offers everything you need to make a quality AR at an affordable price.
News update. A federal judge in Florida has pushed to May 2024 the prospective date of former President Donald Trump's criminal trial over his handling of classified documents left at his Mar-a-Lago resort. The judge rejecting an effort by the former president to delay the trial until after the 2024 presidential campaign. Parts of the nation are continuing to bake as over 90 million Americans across multiple states are reportedly under heat advisories. Republican Congressman from Arizona, Andy Biggs, joins Fox News and gives an update on how his state has been dealing with triple-digit heat.
Well, fortunately in Arizona, people who've been here know how to deal with the desert heat. Now, this is a bit extraordinary for sure. What we're doing is you're seeing a lot of water stations come up. People are being recommended to stay inside.
Tim Berg, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Remember what you were doing 4 years ago at this very moment and how much everything changed a year later. We don't live just anywhere. We live on a crowded island with daily news headlines that make our ancestors spin in their graves. And we all know that tougher days lie ahead. So the real question is, do you have a proper supply of emergency food on hand? If not, now's the time to get some, while things are still relatively calm. The company most Americans choose is My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com to get yourself a one-week supply of emergency food. It comes in a nifty ammo can that's loaded with delicious meals you'll love. No skimping with these meals, as you'll get 2,000 calories per day. You'll like the special $30 savings available this week only on this one-week supply of emergency food, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Welcome back. This is Lock and Load talking to Dean Weingarten. We've been talking about the bears of Hokkaido and Japan. And I mean, I knew that now in Fukushima and everywhere around Fukushima, they're talking about this big issue they're going to have with wild boars. And they don't know what they're going to do about that. They have the same sort of issue with the wild boars that they seem to be having with these bears.
Sure. In the other parts of Japan. And in other parts of Japan, the Asiatic black bear, which is also the bear that they have, which, you know, attacks and kills a fair number of people in India, is common. So the black bear, is Asiatic bear, it's not the same bear as our black bear. It's really a different species. That is... there is some population of them in the mountains and the other islands of Japan. But this is basically the same as our grizzly / Kodiak brown bear in the United States. I mean, there's probably a very, very small genetic difference because they tend to be a bit darker.
Right.
They're close to many of them are close to black in their coloration. But then you've got another subpopulation that's just on a little island that the Russians control now, just a few miles away from Hokkaido. It's north and east a little bit. I mean, I don't know, it's 20 miles away. And maybe a little more. And the Russians took possession of that, I think, at the end of World War II. And that island has a population of these same basic bears, but their color variation... There are about 10% of them that is mostly or partly silver or white. So it shows that you can get a little bit of genetic drift just with a few miles apart. There's speculation as to whether the bears that got on the island, that island, swam there, or when the ocean froze, say in the sometime in the past that they were able to cross over on the ice or whatever. But it just shows that these small variations in color can happen when you have a small population. It really doesn't mean much. It's just that it's a color variation. So I don't expect the Japanese to offer us bear hunts anytime soon, but you don't know. Things are changing. Might happen.
I don't know. One of the things, when you look at look at Japan, they also don't have the same issues that they're having in Europe because of the Islamic immigration that they've had to import there. Even though they have the same issues as Europe. So Japan and a lot of the Asian countries seem to be very reluctant to get out there and make too many changes to their way of life.
Well, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, I think we should be more careful about protecting our way of life.
Right.
We seem to have a bunch of people in the United States who think our way of life is not worth protecting and we should change it as fast as possible.
Right.
I don't agree. I think we've been the most successful culture on the face of the planet over the last 200 years. We shouldn't alter it too quickly just on a fashion sense. So, where would you like to go next?
Well, let's look at you put out some very good stuff. Let's look at this. Let's go to your last one. They went up today. Rights to arms in American colonies predated the Bill of Rights. That's something that I know gets forgotten a lot of times with today's politicians.
It does, and I was surprised. I didn't know this until a couple months ago. But what happened was that you had really good scholarship. Let's see, I'm trying to think of the two people who were involved in it, and they were looking at the history of the banning of arms in the American colonies and in England. Because that's become extremely important in these court cases now that the Bruin decision calls quite reasonably that if you're going to ban some type of weapon in the United States, you have to show that historically we tolerated that type of restriction when the Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. So it was David Coppell and Joseph Greenlee. It was a law review article, 165 pages, published in 2021. And in it, they said that the Royal Charter of the Virginia Colonies in 1606 granted perpetual rights, and I'm quoting here, to bring sufficient shipping and furniture of armor, weapons, ordnance, powder, victual, and other things necessary for these said plantations and for their use and defense there. And these rights applied to all settlers of the Virginia colony. Now, the Virginia colony at that time, it was a large place. It wasn't just what is Virginia today. It included virtually all of the southern, what we consider the southern colonies, North and South Carolina. I think Maryland would have been in there. And then later on, those same rights were granted to the New England colonies, which would have been basically Massachusetts on north. So there were only these middle colonies which weren't granted those rights went by the king early on, and that's because they weren't American colonies at the time. They were Dutch colonies. And those New Netherland colonies were conquered by England in 1664, and although the people there did consider the ability to have arms and the necessity of having arms is very important. It was in 1689, and those colonies would have been, New York, Pennsylvania, Vermont, and New Jersey. Those colonies, they said, were originally part of the New Netherlands from the Dutch, and they were conquered. And then so we have in 1606 these colonies on the American side being granted in perpetuity the right to arms by the English King James I. Whereas the English Bill of Rights, which most scholars say is the one of the origins of our Second Amendment, that Bill of Rights was codified by Parliament in 1689. And that's about 100 years before the Second Amendment Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. That'd be 102 years. But it was certainly being argued in 1789. And so obviously there is a prior history of the right to bear arms for over 100 years before that. Well, not over 100, it was 83 years prior to that. So there was a whole 185-year history of the right to bear arms, starting with the Virginia Charter. And it's obvious when you look at the history of why that was, because the colonists would not have survived without arms and gunpowder and the right to have them and carry them and use them and to form militias and to defend themselves. In fact, in 1622, so that was 16 years after they were granted this right, there was a large massacre of the English colonists by Indians. And so the king, in spite of granting the right to arms in perpetuity...
I was too busy listening, so it snuck up on us. Hang on right there, if you will. Talking to Dean Weingarten. We'll be right back. This is Lock and Load.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen
here.
Come
on, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Wasn't it a beautiful wedding?
Oh, yes, Mimi. It's such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the
group? Hey, Al, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
He hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop this senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue them up. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Last time on the Firing Line, this is Lock and Load, talking to Dean Weingarten as we were learning the history of how the Bill of, you know, the right to keep and bear arms predates this form of government we act, you know, today. Predates the Bill of Rights today. So, anyway, you were saying, sir.
Yes, I was saying that it predates the English Bill of Rights. When people start talking about the right to arms, they often look at the English Bill of Rights as being the antecedent to our Bill of Rights. And they're similar, but ours is far, far stronger. The English Bill of Rights is simply an act of Parliament. It's like our, it's like Congress passing a law. And Congress can invalidate it anytime they want to. There's no constitution in England, no written constitution like there is in the United States that says it takes an extraordinary procedure. In the United States, you have to get votes of three-quarters of the states, essentially, to amend the Constitution. But in England, it just takes a majority of Parliament. That's it. So while they have a Bill of Rights that was established in 1689, they violate it with impunity. You don't have a right to arms in England anymore. You have to go through all kinds of procedures just to be able to possess an air rifle. The air rifles are limited in power to something that just would be barely acceptable for hunting pests in the United States. The right to arms has been obliterated in England over the last 100 years, from about 1920, when they really started restricting it. And the right to free speech in England is under serious attack. They are either, I'm not sure, I think they preceded us in claiming that if you say something that might offend somebody, well, that's against the law. Well, that means the government can restrict anybody from saying anything, because if you're going to say something that doesn't offend anyone, no one has ever been put in jail for that. So, free speech implies that you have the right to offend people. But they don't have the protections in England that we do here. So, I say this because our Bill of Rights is far, far stronger than the English Bill of Rights. And it's that way in part because the founding fathers read history. Remember, the Bill of Rights enacted by Parliament in 1689 was less than 100 years previous it was as close to the founding fathers as World War One is to us. Closer, actually. So that's only a couple generations back. So they were keenly aware of the ability of the government to violate their rights, and they were more protective of the right to bear arms because they constantly faced serious dangers. I mentioned that in 1622, the Virginia colony suffered a huge massacre of colonists by the Indians. They had to have rights to arms to protect themselves. And in the American colonies, hunting was a necessity for food by a lot of people. And so they needed arms to be able to hunt. In England, most of the hunting was reserved to the landed class and the king. And then after this massacre in 1622 in the Virginia colony, the king revoked the 1606 charter in 1624. So 18 years after he gave perpetual right, he revoked the charter and put the colony directly under the control of the crown. Now, to the American colonists and the founding fathers, this would have been a real strong reminder that monarchical power, you know, centralized power in a single individual was not to be trusted, which we see in the way that our Constitution is formed with separation of powers and checks and balances on the executive and on the congressional and on the judicial branches, all meant to keep each other in control. Now, unfortunately, in our system, the progressives, roughly 100 years ago, started saying, well, we need more power in the hands of government to deal with the situation we have today. And so they started concentrating power of the government in a fairly new administrative branch to circumvent the checks and balances, and we see what's happened with that. Now, the other thing that happened in the colony is because they had these urgent requirements for arms at all times, is that the technological advancement of the arms went faster in the colonies than I believe it did back in the European continent. Now, that's not to say that they didn't make technological advances in Europe, but they weren't adopted as quickly, and they weren't as widespread among the population. In England and in the European, the continent of Europe, you got some really excellent small arms for hunting, but they were very, very expensive. Most of them used what's called a wheel lock. Now, a wheel lock acts kind of like like the cigarette lighters, in that you have a wheel that strikes sparks from a flint. These wheel locks were spring-powered, so that when you trip the trigger, the wheel would spin and strike sparks. It's very reliable when it's working, but they're also complicated, and they're very expensive, and so only really wealthy people could afford wheel locks in Europe. Now, a few of them came over, and they were pretty well thought of, but because they're so complicated and expensive, it's hard to make them for the common people. It's like, those British shotguns that run $20,000 for a copy. Well, they're great shotguns, but not many people can afford them. Well, in the American colonies, they started to make, let's say the snap hands and the flintlocks, and they're kind of the same thing. A flintlock is a somewhat improved snap hands. And by 1550s, they had basically supplanted what were the old matchlocks, were the relatively inexpensive firearms that were coexisting with the wheel locks. So the matchlocks was common for about 10 or 20 years at the beginning, and they quickly converted over to snap hanses or flint locks because they were much quicker, much more effective. They worked better if you had wet weather. They were more reliable, and primarily you could use them effectively on a moment's notice. With the matchlock, it was just very hard to do that. Not to say the matchlocks weren't effective. The Spanish used them very effectively to conquer the Aztec and Inca empires. I mean, not by themselves, but they were an important part of that. So there's no question, one, that firearms were common in the American colonies right from the start. They were important. The colonies almost certainly would not have been able to exist without them. And the colonies, the American colonies, in many ways, were ahead of the British islands and Europe in general in preserving the necessity of and the right to keep and bear arms.
Well, that ended in just a perfect time, Dean.
Perfect. You luck out sometimes.
Sometimes it works out. And you're going to be around on Tuesday?
See, yes. I may be back in Arizona by that time.
Very good. I appreciate you joining me today.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. Back again on Monday. Between now and then, remember this. It has never been about gun control. Not once. Not ever. And one thing I rarely do, I call attention to the Gun Owners News Hour with Bill Frady show. That will be also here on Genesis Communications Network. So it's also out there as the podcast as well. Go check it out. This has been Lock and Load.
Holster.com, the home of DeSantis quality-built American-made products for 45-plus years. Supporting police and government contracts from first responders to responsible citizens. Holster.com is your source for quality American-made leather and kydex holsters for the armed American. For concealed carry or open carry, Holster.com has what you need.
We didn't invent concealment.
We perfected it. Go to Holster.com now and buy a DeSantis holster today.
At MGS, we have what it takes to reinvent yourself. With a curriculum designed to balance work, family, and a gun repair education, MGS provides the gateway into one of the fastest growing segments of the gun industry. Modern Gun School's mission is to provide high quality distance education using time tested materials and hands on projects designed to develop a proficiency in both the technique and the business of gunsmithing. Go to mgs.edu. MGS Trade School. Your future is waiting.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers, there's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. GCNfood.com.